clear and concise. This is the Jason Burmis Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
And we are into the second hour of the show. We were talking to Courtney Turner. We were talking about artificial intelligence in medicine. And there are a couple other points that I think are extremely important to go over when we are talking about artificial intelligence in medicine, and not only the Internet of Things, but now the Internet of Bodies and medication that can be monitored remotely. It's not just a remote consultation, and where that technology has already been utilized. For instance, when I was talking to my previous guest, Truth Slinger X, he talked about re-education camps, not really tongue in cheek, and psychological evaluations that may be forced. Let's pull that back for a moment. If in fact we have forced psychological evaluations, there will be forced outcomes. In other words, possibly forced medications. And there's this movie out there, it catches a little steam. Sometimes people think it's pretty cheesy. It's called Equilibrium, and it has the whole thing, the AI government, the drugged populace. But what it misses is the surveillance society. So in other words, it's not so track trace database that they are keeping tabs on whether or not you're actually taking that medication. In other words, they would actually have to test your blood. No, they don't have to do that anymore. What do I mean by that? Well, I've often talked about MySight technology, which is Bluetooth-enabled medicine, smart medicines out there. And MySight technology has already been utilized, get this, with a drug treated for depression. So in other words, psychological evaluations. And that drug isn't just for depression. It's called Abilify. It's for depression. When you're already prescribed antidepressants don't work, so we're going to put some Abilify on top of that. That is extremely scary, and that is actually happening right now. Now let's go to the flip side of that. Joe Rogan last week, maybe 2 weeks ago at this point, discovered phenbenzodol. Now, I want to say this really clearly for everybody to hear. I am not a doctor. I am not giving you medical advice whatsoever. I am encouraging you to take a look at phenbenzodol for a cancer treatment, not because I know it works. I'm doing it because of a guy named Joe Tippins, which I covered many, many years ago at this point, I think 6 or 7 years ago, almost got him on the show. And then right before the COVID 1984 nightmare, he canceled on me. We haven't been in touch since. But he had made his rounds around the local media because he had done everything you're supposed to do for cancer, went through the chemo. I mean, he said that his organs were cooked like bacon at some point, folks. And basically, they said, hey, sorry, dude, time to die. He gets contacted from an old college acquaintance. And that college acquaintance tells him about phenbenzodol and how somebody he knows within the pharmaceutical arena cured their brain cancer using phenbenzodol. This is a dog dewormer. Again, I'm not saying it. You can go check out mycancerstory.rocks. And see all the information for yourself. Now, phenbenzodol is an antiparasitic and actually has a few clinical trials that you can actually check out and studies on curing cancer. Now, in particular with this, vitamin E, fish oil, turmeric curcumin, that was part of it. Joe Tippins is still alive today. Beat stage 4 cancer, okay? And Joe Rogan just found out about phenbenzodol. And all bets are off. See how humanity can beat the AI, especially when humanity comes together. And guess what? You can come together at standinthelight.uk for a bank holiday weekend for the entire Freedom Loving Tribe with 30 awake artists, including Danny Rampling and Mobius Loop and all-night acoustic fire pit, bouncy castles, and Hove Sussex for the children, plus loads of amazing stalls and scrumptious food vendors. This is an event not to be missed by anyone who's aware of the truth of the world. A Stand in the Park and the Light paper presents Stand in the Light, a truth music festival in the beautiful Lake District on May 24th to the 27th. You get 4 days of camping and full access to the whole festival for just £60 plus a booking fee. Children under five come in free. There is no better bargain anywhere. Visit our website now to make sure you don't miss what is going to be a brilliant weekend for the whole freedom-loving family. StandInTheLight.uk. StandInTheLight.uk. We will see you there, and we will see you on the flip side of this quick break with the headlines.
Giving you what you want.
I want the facts.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
On Monday, an Australian federal court sided with Elon Musk, rejecting a bid by the Safety Commissioner, Australia's online watchdog, to extend an injunction to remove ex-Twitter posts showing a priest under attack by a knife-wielding assailant in April. Here with the story, once again, is TNT News producer Adam Clark bringing the ruckus. Elon Musk has saved us once again, my man. Woo! Tell us about it.
That's really funny that you say that. There's actually one of the articles I was looking at today actually said something to the tune of, and I'm just like paraphrasing slightly, how this Australian federal judge has swooped in to defend free speech by siding with Elon Musk in his latest spat with Australian courts, Australia's Ministry of Truth. That's what they called them. You know, it all had all the words and all the things. Very funny. Good stuff. This is, of course, to do with the video which showed a teenager stabbing an Assyrian bishop, Marmari Emmanuel, whose popular, sometimes controversial TikTok sermons often garner millions of views. This took place during a church's live stream, and it rapidly spread online. Police later determined it was religiously motivated, act of terror. It was a terrorist act after linking the 16-year-old who's charged in the stabbing to a group of seven teens, quote, accused of following a violent extremist ideology in raids across Sydney, end quote. That's what AP News had to say about it. Al Jazeera reported that Bishop Emmanuel has since reassured his followers that he recovered quickly and forgave the teen. Let's see here. According to Reuters, in April, Australia's eSafety Commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, had cited Australia's Online Safety Act and asked X to remove 65 posts showing footage from the attack, but X refused to remove the posts. X's owner, Mr. Elon Musk, said that Australia could not expect to enforce its safety law globally, accusing Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese of attempting to have, quote, jurisdiction over all of Earth, end quote. Musk wrote on X, quote, if any country is allowed to censor content for all countries, which is what the Australian e-safety commissar is demanding, then what is to stop any country from controlling the entire internet, end quote. He sounds jealous. Instead of removing the posts, X geo-blocked anyone in Australia from being able to view the footage. Australia's safety regulator considered this inadequate because approximately 25% of Australians use VPNs, virtual private networks, to mask their locations online. It also appeared unclear if X's geo-blocking was even working as it was intended. A Reuters journalist in Australia reported that the video remained accessible without a VPN, and on a thread where some Redditors defended Musk, for bucking the order, some agreed that X's attempt at geo-blocking appeared futile. In the ruling on Monday, the federal court judge, Jeffrey Kennett, did not explain why he denied the safety regulator's request to extend the temporary order. On Wednesday, there will be a case management hearing that could shed light on his decision, and a final hearing on the matter is expected in the coming weeks, as reported by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. While X has notched a win today, there could be fines on the horizon for failure to comply with the order. X is risking fines under the Online Safety Act, as well as potentially contempt of court fines. And it would not be the first time X was fined for violating the law. The New York Times reported that last year, X became the first platform fined under the safety law and was required to pay approximately 386 $100,000 U.S. dollars after failing to cooperate with the regulators' anti-child abuse probe on the platform. So, yes, there's been a lot of tit for tat, a lot of back and forth, a lot of fighting, a lot of feuding, Jason. But Elon Musk, he's won this this battle. But has he won the war? And is the war truly for everybody's free speech? What say you, my friend?
Well, I doubt it's the war for free speech for the rest of us. Once again, this is a freedom of speech, not reach guy. The algorithm is absolutely terrible there as well. Even on a post that I should get some traction on Twitter. Let me give you an example, right? Steve Buscemi, famous actor, actually the cousin of my big brother in my fraternity, Eric Buscemi, gets duffed in the face in New York City, plain as day, not the first celebrity in the last few months to get duffed in the face in New York City. So, you know, again, I adhere to the algorithm. I got two little screenshots. They're not even links. They're pictures. Something like that. They're like, that's my big post for the week. That's like 1,500 impressions. I got 40,000 followers. 1,500. If I get 25 retweets on something like that, I've seen accounts with less than 10,000 followers put something like that out, 10,000 retweets across the board and likes. It's Johnny nonsense. Now, look, the idea that one nation state gets to decide what they can censor across the world, especially when we're talking about a newsworthy event, in this case, the physical attack and attempted murder of individuals, some actually dying. I mean, there's a multitude of these they've tried to take off because there's a multitude of stabbings over there, because as much as they want to tell you that like violence doesn't exist in places they don't have guns, they just stab you. Okay, they just that's what they do. Yeah, I guess less people get taken out. Bad people are going to do bad things. We should be able to show them. This is still not the end for the free speech cases with X. For instance, you have Billboard Chris and his case and his refusal to take down certain confrontations there. And here's the deal. Are they really that concerned about the safety for children? Because one of the things that just no one ever discusses about X is that hardcore pornography is 100% allowed on that platform. Now, do you think somebody who's not 18 years old can't take the magic box, make an anonymous X account, and then watch that material? Of course they can, at a whim. That's how concerned they are, kids. And let's flip the script even further. How much underage pornography, you know, actual criminal activity is also in the nether regions of X in Australia and across the world. And they're not so concerned about that, Adam. That's not making the headlines. That's not going to court. And instead, that should be the true focus. It kind of reminds me again of that first story where they tell you, we love you and we're just trying to protect you. We're doing the best thing for you, and they're doing the complete opposite. Musk talks a good game, but the baseline, again, the baseline for everything should be freedom of speech, Adam.
Oh, I 100% agree, and I think that both sides are missing that point, but you get it for sure. This is a giant pissing contest. They've turned this very real issue into like a quest for a strip big baddie, you know, big daddy, big brother Australia government. I mean, because, wow, the Australian government, man, kudos to them. What a bunch of POSs for the way they handled the pandemic and some of the things they've been doing since. It's just pretty wild, man. So, you know, so they've got something to prove. They're trying to show to the whole world that they're not going to bend to the, you know, the likes of a, there was somebody who quoted calling Elon Musk a narcissistic cowboy. So they're not down for him. And Elon Musk, of course, is playing this giant superhero role where it's all about, he's the last bastion and champion for free speech. There's nowhere else, nobody else. It's all Mr. Musk and nothing but Mr. Musk. So I wasn't kidding when I said he was probably jealous about the fact that, you know, Australia wants to like censor or rule or control the internet. No, he wants to censor and control and rule the internet. So, you know, it's a battle for that, Jason, not for free speech.
Absolutely not. And you can have all the quote unquote freedom of speech in the world. When you curb the reach, when you do not have a level playing field, that's not a meritocracy. We're constantly hearing about equity or equality of outcome, not equality of opportunity. And guys, guess what? On all of these free speech platforms or social media platforms that pretend to be free speech, there is no equality of opportunity for a guy like myself or a guy like Adam, because we are counter to the great narrative that they're trying to program society with via AI right now. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue to talk AI. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT after this.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Royd.
The longer it takes for a company to do disaster recovery and get back to business, the longer it takes for their customers to be back in contact with, you know, the products and services they're using from the businesses that you're protecting. So, I mean, it's sort of a domino effect. It's not just the company, but all of that company's customers. And these days in the modern era, I mean, as they say for the young people, instant gratification isn't instant enough. I mean, we want disaster recovery to happen in minutes, if not hours, like at the most. And in the past, it could have taken days.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, in fact, where I'm coming to you from, Western Canada, our biggest pharmacy chain here had a ransomware attack 4 or 5 days ago, and their stores have literally been closed now for going on day 6, where nobody's able to get prescriptions. Like, can you imagine not being able to fill your prescriptions because of a cyber attack? I mean, it's devastating, not just to the business and the people who are financially impacted there, but just to our community in general.
Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Royd on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Today's News Talk Radio.
Now we're talking. Down.
TNT.
We are now joined by entrepreneur, author, and AI expert, Aaron Day. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. Now, we have this announcement supposedly coming out via OpenAI. A lot of people think this will be the new version of ChatGPT. What are your thoughts?
You're talking about the omni-channel functionality? It looks pretty interesting. I haven't had a chance to use it yet, but it certainly seems like it's a game changer.
So when we're talking about Altman, he's also kind of made the rounds this week in the mainstream media talking about deep fakes, et cetera, and how he thinks that they are going to affect the upcoming election. Also says he's going to be putting out a tool that can figure these deep fakes out. We have some of those tools already. He's also floated Sora. So, you know, this guy seems to be, you know, everything encompassing AI, especially when we're talking about that visual arena. What can we expect in the coming months? Is Sora going to be something that's going to be commercially available on some level, or are they going to hold that to their chest? And what about these other tools to ferret out deepfakes?
I mean, it's going to be highly competitive. I mean, you're obviously going to have multiple players entering this field. So it's a big issue for all of the parties involved. I can't say for sure. I haven't actually tracked Sora that much.
So, you know, when I look at Sora and I look at where we are at text generation, right? Obviously, we've had Midjourney. Photoshop, for instance, has also encapsulated AI and image from text generation. But to me, you know, some of these platforms are extremely limiting, something like Photoshop in particular. There are so many prompts out there that you are not able to utilize, and that's extremely concerning. Are you seeing more of a constriction around those type of prompts? Obviously, Midjourney is its own entity and don't have those same type of restrictions, but we certainly saw what Google put out as their first product. And, you know, when you've typed in something like World War II German soldier, it did not give you reality.
No, and as I play around with the, I use Claude, I use Gemini, I use X, and I use ChatGPT regularly, and it is almost like a video game trying to work through the rule sets and try to figure out which set of prompts will work in which application with each AI. And it has become incredibly constrained just over the last year, not only in terms of what prompts you can use, but what information you can get back. It's very clear that they have scrubbed what data they're even allowed to query at this point, even if you can get a prompt through. I used to be able to, in fact, it's almost now as if some of these AIs have become lazy, where it's like you asked, one of the things that I found AI was useful for was creating tables of information where you're trying to compare a whole bunch of different things across different, you know, indices. And now it won't even spit back that data. Sometimes it will tell you how you could go about acquiring the data and where you could go to get the data, but it doesn't even give you the data. So I find these things to be incredibly unreliable, actually, if you are in any way, shape, or form having to depend on them. And you really do kind of get a sense just playing with them, which one is likely to give you which type of answer versus the other.
Well, isn't that one of the inherent issues, is that with all of these updates, it's supposed to be making the technology more accessible and better, and that's certainly what we're being sold on, but it seems to be restrictive of certain information with each iteration. You know, you just mentioned the fact that it was very easy to get information that would then be tabled and presented, and now you can barely find where you can go to find that information and then input it yourself. Do you think that's going to be the trend around these big AIs, especially with this move, for instance, with the Biden administration putting in chief artificial intelligence officers throughout the bureaucracies and really putting a timestamp on it? You know, we just had HHS announce theirs, NASA announce theirs. And of course, all of it will be restrictive in the sense that it has to be audited by the government. However, the intel agencies and the Defense Department are, of course, not subject to that audit.
Well, it's already restrictive, and it's already, you know, because I do a lot of research. My book is about CBDCs, and it's about globalism and technocracy. So a lot of the topics that I do research on, I can't even get any information about anymore. I used to be able to, but if you try querying these AIs about depopulation and about topics that are, they are sensitive topics, but they're the kinds of topics you should be able to get some information about. And now it actually already doesn't spit anything back. And we know the censorship industrial complex has gotten out of hand. Now they're classifying a new type of information as misinformation. So it's information that may be true, but it's just inconvenient that it's true. And somehow somebody politically decides that this misinformation might be used in a way that the state doesn't like. So we already know that's government policy. We already know the censorship industrial complex has implemented that. What is the most alarming with AI is how quickly they've incorporated these rule sets. So I remember using search engines back in the mid-90s. Before Google, you know, there were things like AltaVista and Excite and Yahoo and InfoSeek. And search results weren't scrubbed. They weren't sanitized. I mean, it took almost a full decade until Google got involved. And then Google actually early on had a, you know, do no harm policy. So the search engine results there were actually reasonable search results. Now search is completely sanitized and pushed from the top down. And AI has gone from the wild, wild west to being more regulated than search engines in 1 year. So in what took 10 years to regulate for search engines has happened in 12 months in AI.
So we got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about these central bank digital currencies, blockchain technology, and where you think they are going in the future, especially because, again, that information is so heavily held to their chest. And those narratives you talked about, misinformation, they made up a whole nother word. It was called malinformation. Could be 100% true, but again, it's destructive to their narrative. More TNT after this.
Great news.
Good news, everyone.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Amid Russia's ongoing military advances toward Kharkov, Ukraine's second largest city, the Ukrainian armed forces have replaced the commander of the Kharkov Operative Tactical Group. The Russian military has made recent gains in Ukraine's Kharkov region, exploiting inadequate Ukrainian defenses, according to a BBC report citing a Ukrainian soldier. Breon Dressen, a preschool teacher in Utah, sued AstraZeneca for not covering her medical costs following a severe reaction to their COVID-19 vaccine during a clinical trial.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction.
Misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
We are back, and when we talk about central bank digital currencies, they've kind of become a buzz within the alternative media. They're not really being discussed in the mainstream media, at least as not any type of threat. And really, they're the next step in digital money. You know, I've been talking about digital money for a very long time. I was extremely alarmed a decade and a half plus ago when the International Monetary Fund started issuing SDR, special drawing rights units, which were basically zeros and ones, just not blockchain technology. But now we are starting to get into programmable currencies. What to you are the biggest threats of the rise of a CBDC?
Well, the entire purpose of CBDC is about control, and it's about programmability, and it's about censorship. You could even hear the head of the Bank for International Settlements talking about this. This is all about control. I actually dropped everything that I was doing. I wrote my book, The Final Countdown, and ran for president to bring awareness to exactly how important this threat is, because I've been involved with crypto since 2012. I actually stopped using the dollar in 2019. So I've been using crypto, gold, and silver for 5 years. And what I found was, I was finding that friends of mine like Ian Freeman and now Roger Ver and others are being thrown in prison or having their businesses destroyed. And I looked at, well, why are we having this complete and total crackdown on crypto? And what I found is that CBDCs are being developed and deployed at an alarming pace. I'll just give you a couple of examples. There are now more CBDC accounts globally than crypto accounts. There are 1.3 billion CBDC accounts. In 2020, there were 35 countries at the just exploring CBDC stage. So that's 2020. Today, there are 134 countries pursuing CBDCs. 11 CBDC programs have already been implemented. All G7 countries and countries representing 98% of the GDP of the planet are pursuing CBDCs. And more alarmingly, the United States has actually already completed 3 CBDC pilot programs. And so while it isn't talked about at all in the mainstream media, they've already developed the technology for a U.S. CBDC. And President Biden has signed an executive order, 14067, which authorizes the U.S. government to pursue a CBDC while cracking down and regulating decentralized crypto. So it's actually government policy right now to pursue a CBDC.
So let's talk about that crackdown. We were talking earlier this week about the arrest of Bitcoin Jesus and Roger Veers, I think is his name. But yeah, we are seeing a crackdown on crypto. But at the same time, you're also seeing Bitcoin and Ethereum absorbed via these ETFs and BlackRock. What's the move there?
The move there, in my opinion, these ETFs, you know, particularly with Bitcoin, you look at now, first of all, the narrative has shifted. Roger, who I interviewed, wrote a book, Hijacking Bitcoin, where he talks about the fact that Bitcoin was originally supposed to be peer-to-peer cash for the world. It was supposed to be money that you could use that was cheap and fast and had no third parties in the middle. It wasn't supposed to be digital gold. It wasn't an asset class that BlackRock and others held and that you didn't spend. It was supposed to be a new form of cash, and it was hijacked in 2017 by the same people who are building the US CBDC. So this is an important point that people aren't aware of. A group out of MIT led by a guy named Joy Ito actually funded these changes that kept Bitcoin slow and expensive, called SegWit and Lightning. And he also funded all 3 US CBDC pilot programs. So at one point, in 2017, they made it so that Bitcoin is no longer useful as cash. while they actually put effort into developing a CBDC. One of the developers who worked on Bitcoin is a co-author and primary developer of the US retail CBDC called Project Hamilton. So it is a hijacking even worse than Roger described. And so now we have no, what is our alternative to CBDC? When they roll out CBDC, having digital gold isn't an alternative when their CBDC can do 1.8 million transactions per second, and you're dealing with a technology that hasn't been updated in 15 years, it can only do seven transactions per second. So I believe that the ETFs were designed to continue to make sure that there's no threat to CBDC, but it also makes Bitcoin very easy to confiscate. So FDR confiscated gold in the 1930s. And most of the gold that he confiscated was gold that people held in vaults or in safety deposit boxes. If you held your gold at home, they weren't going door to door. While you were legally obligated to turn it in, people didn't. So about 25% of the gold remained outstanding. If they decide to confiscate Bitcoin through an ETF, they will be able to do so at the snap of a finger. It's even written in the risk factors of the ETFs themselves.
So you're telling me that if you're invested in Bitcoin through these ETFs, it's extremely easy to confiscate. What about those that say that nobody has my keys, I'm not invested in the ETF, they can't take my Bitcoin? I've often now pointed to the German case where you had these two individuals with, I think, 2,000 Bitcoin worth something like $50 billion, and the government was able to confiscate that.
The U.S. is now one of the largest holders of Bitcoin. They didn't buy any of it on the open market. They seized all of it. They seized Bitcoin from Ross Ulbricht. They seized Bitcoin from Ian Freeman. So while, yes, you can technically hold on to your keys, there's a big problem with all of this. Bitcoin is an open public ledger, and they're now able to use chain analysis software to figure out generally who owns what. Unless you somehow magically acquired this stuff, not through an exchange, and you're not identified, which, by the way, is almost no one. The number of people that have untrackable Bitcoin is almost no one. Most people can be tracked using this analytics. So this idea that you're not going to give up your keys, sure, you could not give up your keys, but they will throw you in prison. They have been throwing people in prison. I have friends that are in prison right now that actually didn't do anything wrong. These are people that actually played by the rules, got legal opinions, were doing things out of the desire to push freedom and peer-to-peer transactions, and they're still in prison related to Bitcoin-related activities and have still had their assets seized. So it's not much of a victory if you're in a prison cell, but at least they didn't get your keys. That's not a solution to central bank digital currencies.
It certainly is not. We have run out of time. I appreciate you really putting that down for people, because so many people are kind of in this la-la land when in regards to the reality surrounding current crypto, where we may be at a CBDC and the global economy in general. Thank you so much, Aaron. We're going to take a break. Final segment of the show, more TNT after this.
I'm Nyheim Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go, but I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there, providing hot meals, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding.
To learn more, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Perception versus the truth. Jason Burmis on today's News Talk, TNT.
We are now joined by fellow TNT presenter and tech journalist Alex Zaharoff-Root. Thank you so much for joining us, brother. Let's talk ChatGPT. Some big announcements earlier today. What are they?
Well, we have the new model, ChatGPT 4.0. Now, the O stands for Omni, but they're not calling it GPT 4 Omni, they're calling it GPT 4.0. And this is coming the day before Google has its big I.O. event. So obviously they wanted to come out with a bang. And this is also coinciding with the reports that Apple is partnering with ChatGPT instead of Google to enhance its on-device large language model chatbot when it launches its new iPad OS 18 for beta next month. But the features are that you can now speak to it very naturally. It can respond to you very quickly. The voices sound more natural than ever before. Now, you can go to openai.com's website. You can come to my website, techadvice.life. And right at the very top, I have the press release or the information from ChatGPT with the video. It's a 28-minute video that shows you how it's working and how it can instantly translate between 50 different languages, how you can interrupt it whilst it's talking to you. And it's so fluid and natural. You can just imagine this is coming from, you know, a C-3PO-style robot in our future, but you can access it on your phone. And a number of these ChatGPT 4 features, the previous version, which used to be the best yesterday, are now coming free over the next few weeks to the free users of the ChatGPT app who aren't paying the US $20 per month.
Well, now that this thing is going to be more speech friendly and it's not going to be so much text prompts, what does this mean for it commercially? What kind of jobs is it going to be taking? Because if you can have just a simple touchpad that now you're just speaking to and it's naturally responding to you, obviously this is going to be utilized in the business world.
Well, look, absolutely. And look, let's not forget that you could already speak naturally to ChatGPT 3.5, the free version that has been available for some time now, and ChatGPT 4. But now the responses will be quicker. If you go to Twitter, and I've got the link on my site to a thread that has a number of examples. I mean, getting ChatGPT to explain math problems and explain things to you just by looking at the equation and then, you know, telling it, don't give me the answer. Let me, you know, help me to figure it out. I mean, this was a father with his son and they were talking to ChatGPT and getting these explanations. And again, you can see this. It's very simple, very easy. There was an example of customer support. There was an example of two ChatGPTs talking to each other, even singing different lines of a song. But things like customer support will be one of the things that will go. I mean, we already have a company called Klarna, one of the buy now, pay later organizations, where you can buy something and then pay it off over time. A bit like a credit card, but obviously a bit different. And they got rid of 700 jobs in their customer service division, replaced it with AI. And the typical interaction between the customer and support went down from 11 minutes down to 2 minutes. So obviously they would still have people there for more advanced customer support queries, but the satisfaction went up. And, you know, the sort of repetitive jobs that could be done more efficiently by an AI are the ones that are going to go first, especially if the AI can now talk to you. I mean, some of these woke teachers that are teaching our kids goodness knows what, if you can get personalized education from ChatGPT or any other sort of AI GPT system that you can also tell it the curriculum you wanted to teach your kids, well, that's going to get rid of a lot of teaching jobs. I mean, good teachers will still be valued and respected, but look, all technology has gotten rid of jobs, but it has also enabled new jobs. And we're yet to find out what those new jobs are going to be, but we're going to enable more human creativity and do high value things.
Well, you are much more optimistic about working the teachers out than I am, especially because of the programming of these large language models and kind of the parameters surrounding those programs. You know, you just mentioned Google, OpenAI, Apple. Let's talk Microsoft. And this is kind of one of those examples that's alarming to me. Microsoft now has an offline AI that they're basically testing with the intelligence communities. Now, I've been big on reporting on the chief AI officers that are now coming into fruition in the United States government. HHS just announced theirs. NASA just announced theirs. We got less than 30 days. All of these different institutions are not only going to have to announce theirs, but they're on for full audits. In other words, whatever hardware, software, programming results are audited by the U.S. government. The only two exceptions, and there are some other ones built into patents and partnerships, but are the intel communities and the Defense Department. This creates a rather alarming monopoly to me. And when I hear about Microsoft, for instance, doing this with the military, it's kind of par for the course. They've done this in the past, but it's also on the heels of them announcing that they're going to be opening up a large AI data center here in the Midwest in Wisconsin. So what are your thoughts on this offline AI, and are we ever going to see this in the public arena?
Look, absolutely. Everyone is trying to get offline AI working on your computer, even down to your smartphone, so that you don't have to be connected. One of the problems of being connected to the cloud is that if there's a disconnection from the cloud for any reason, you are no longer able to access all those advanced models. And already NVIDIA, if you have an NVIDIA graphics card on a Windows PC, you can now run a large language model, the OpenAI, well, style, you know, ChatGPT style chatbot directly on your device. You can download one of the open source repositories of billions of parameters. And the future for these things is open source. I mean, people are not going to want to trust Google's woke responses or those from Microsoft or anybody else. If you want to be able to know what's in your AI system, weed out the information that you don't think that, you know, you or your kids should learn. And, you know, this open AI side of things is, it's been big in the world of operating systems. We've got Linux now. It was during the 2000s, it was going to be the year the Linux desktop never came because it just wasn't as advanced as Windows or Mac. But these days, you know, people are using open source Linux and a bunch of open source programs more readily and in a more sophisticated and mature manner than ever before. And the same thing is happening for AI. You will have AI on your device. Google is going to talk about all the different AI models that run on its device, and will go to the cloud when necessary, because obviously technology is evolving. But it's the same with Apple. They're going to announce in a month's time that Siri will be much smarter. I mean, they're supposed to be doing a deal with OpenAI for these more advanced reasonings. And given what OpenAI showcased today, and it's definitely worth your time to watch the 26-minute video and all the other videos that are on X now, you can see why they did the deal with OpenAI rather than Google. But running AI locally and not connected to the internet is going to be the future, just like with the battles between centralization and decentralization. You know, we want things to be decentralized. We don't want them to be centralized. And that's what's coming. That's what's happening. And it's evolving faster than ever before.
So when we're talking about these offline AIs, are these kind of these personal assistant AIs or personas that were being sold on? Eric Schmidt recently talked about these. Obviously, this would be that type of product. And, you know, when you talk about AI and creepiness, I'll never forget the movie Her from Spike Jonze. Nothing made me feel dirtier and filthier than that movie, where a weird Joaquin Phoenix character is basically in a romantic relationship with his device, the AI Scarlett Johansson. Are we going to see not only the movement into personal assistance, but these odd personal relationships that maybe reflect that dystopian film?
Yeah, absolutely. Already children are talking and making friends with AI. Sam Altman, the CEO and the big boss at OpenAI, put the word her into a tweet this morning in response to other people. So yeah, absolutely. People are looking to see that happen and to see how it's going to be both, you know, bad and good. I mean, the CEO of Bumble talked about how in the future, the AI version of you, your AI chatbot, will talk to other AI chatbots with, you know, other people and decide whether you guys should be dating or not. There's also the concern that I heard Glenn Beck talk about a few months ago, where, you know, your AI is going to respond to emails from other people and you'll have the AIs talking to each other and then telling you what they've decided on your behalf. Now, obviously, that's creepy. That we don't want to lose personal autonomy. But, you know, humans do things because they can, and we don't learn from history. And then, you know, we have to sort of figure out the consequences as we go along. Now, the risk, of course, is that everything becomes so advanced that we get Skynet and it wants to bomb us out of existence. But as Elon Musk has said about Grok, I mean, we need to teach AI that humans are a very important part of the universe, that we should not be destroyed, that we are the creators of AI, and we need to be working together for our mutual benefit, not where we are AI's master or its slave. None of us want to sit there, like the famous science fiction story said, on the couch with folded hands because the robots are doing everything for us and not, you know, letting us learn our own mistakes. So humanity's got a long way to go. I mean, we are having these discussions now because we can see the potential dangers. But the potential benefits of AI are also very strong too. And I've been watching Star Trek Discovery, and they're always talking to Zora, the onboard computer, using basically advanced prompts of the sort that we would have today. I'm sure in the future we'll just be thinking to the AI and it'll pick up what we're thinking. But this merging of technology and machine, I mean, it's a humanist, it's dangerous. But we're never going to go through this, and we're going to be learning very quickly what's right and what's wrong.
So let's talk deepfakes. Obviously, the rise of deepfakes has been happening for some time. They're not new. No. You know, I'd say I saw my first, you know, semi-okay deepfake 6-7 years ago. They have become extremely convincing and much easier to produce. Earlier you talked about NVIDIA and graphics cards. They are much more available. They took kind of a hit, at least the newer ones, during the COVID 1984 nightmare, where the prices really spiked and even went away from the crypto range. However, now NVIDIA, not only is their stock exploding, but they kind of have these virtual arenas that you're going to buy into. So in other words, they're building digital twins of factories, but it's through their server systems. Like you said, they've also kind of introduced these commercial tools, and graphics cards are extremely powerful and one of the major tools in creating deepfakes. We got this Katy Perry deepfake out there that fooled her mom. Not shocking. You know, you mentioned Elon Musk. I'm not sure if you're aware of the Adrian Dittman scenario, but you know, you have this person who sounds and acts exactly like Musk. A lot of people wondering if there's AI involved in that, or possibly just voice modification software, maybe a combination of both. These types of things are really putting us into an era that I call the post-truth world, because it is so hard to distinguish reality via digital media. So, you know, what are some of the perils we're going to be seeing, and what are some of the solutions?
Well, Warren Buffett was comparing AI to the nuclear bomb, and he said it had the same sort of dangers and opportunities that nuclear weapons have given us. And he said that he'd seen some deepfakes of himself that were so convincing he didn't think his wife and children would be able to tell them apart from the real thing. And the easiest way to be able to tell if something is deepfaked is by using another AI to tell us whether it's deepfaked or not. Because if it's so convincing that we can't actually see anymore and trust our own eyesight, then that's obviously going to be a dangerous thing. And we've been hearing for the past few months that the US election is going to see the rise of deepfakes. I mean, if we see a Trump deepfake, you mentioned voice modulation. Look, there's obviously some great voice people out there who can mimic Trump perfectly. But if you see a deep fake of Biden and it's lucid, you'll know that it's fake, because Biden's not like that in real life. So there are going to be some signs, some tells. There's going to be some tells as to whether or not something is real. But ultimately, you know, human judgment is going to be challenged. I mean, we're going to see, I can't wait, I mean, for the good side of it, where every episode of Star Trek The Next Generation or Seinfeld or your favorite show is ingested into an AI. And then you're still going to need people who understand good stories and art direction, but you could create entirely new episodes with the actors and their voices in their prime for new TV shows. I mean, kids will be doing it in their bedroom. So there's obviously great advances in creativity and what we can do just by talking about it, by thinking about it, by explaining what we want, by the system even guessing where we'd want to go. But clearly the dangers are there for misinformation. I mean, I heard somebody talking about how you could have a deepfake, an official deepfake version of your favorite politician or one you hate, for example, contacting you individually on your phone, you know, through messaging, addressing you by name, talking about various issues that relate to you. But the whole thing is computer generated. So that, you know, we often talk about how funny we could have clones of ourselves. With AI, you can. You can have a deep fake version of yourself. And in fact, I was chatting with Sonia Poulton, one of our colleagues on TNT Radio in the UK. We were talking about grief bots and dead bots. And already on the ChatGPT store, if you're a user that pays extra, you can start programming a custom GPT with all the different documents of your life, with videos, with stories you've told, you know, it can clone your voice. And then whilst you're alive or once you've gone to the next world, that can be a digital copy of you that your descendants, your grandchildren, whoever it is, can talk to and hear from, hear the stories and actually have a real conversation with you. I mean, I've seen this in television shows, Star Trek Discovery. The doctor was talking to his long since passed grandmother, and he was getting some great feedback from her, and it was very touching for him to see her.
Alex, let's take it even further. Superman, yeah. The original Richard Donner series. I mean, he's talking to his father, Jor-El, as if he's there. You know, those type of things are more and more becoming a reality. And quite frankly, that is also extremely alarming to me. You know, you mentioned the election. Sam Altman is now making the prediction that deepfakes will influence the Biden-Trump RFK Jr. election. We've yet to see anything in that arena, but certainly not out of the realm of possibility. You talked about kids doing this in their bedrooms and editing new TV shows. Well, they've already kind of taken over 80s pop culture. The fake Tom Cruise videos are some of my favorites, and I'm the first guy to watch a prime Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone review a new movie. That's all stuff that's commercially available out there right now. In the last 90 seconds or so, what should we be paying attention to in this arena, and what can we expect in the coming days and weeks?
Well, we should learn how to use AI, learn how to, you know, just learn about it. I mean, play with it. You know, there are plenty of courses online. Universities are giving out free courses for this, the large universities. I mean, but nothing is better than simply going there and playing with it yourself. So, you know, that way you can explain it to your children, learn how to best make use of it. Don't be bamboozled by it. I mean, nothing to be afraid of. I mean, sure, down in the future, if it turns into Skynet and we're all blown up, yes. But we're far from that at the moment. So get educated about it. Learn with it. Play with it. Have debates and discussions. Talk to it. And don't be afraid of it. So that's what I would say.
I'm not necessarily afraid. I think it's a technology. It's a double-edged sword. A hammer can build a house. It can bash your brains in. However, if it's fully regulated by the military-industrial complex, there's not real innovation, and they put the guardrails on it, I think it is extremely dangerous, and we have to have that concern as well. Alex, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you guys for joining us here at TNT Radio Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Remember, to me, it is not about left or right. It is always about right and wrong. I absolutely love you guys, and we'll see you tomorrow night on the flip side.